Thank you again to everybody for coming out, taking part in the yeshiva's Yarche Kala. As always, one of the important parts of coming to Yarche Kala is hearing shiurim, dibrei chizuk, dibrei zayrus from our rebbeim. And as much as that, another important part is to gain hadracha from our rebbeim. Shragi and Tzvi, both gracious enough to join us and take part in a question and answer. I asked Rabbi Neuberger if I was allowed to ask them the same questions that I asked the Rosh Yeshiva. He told me only if I was interested. I don't know if the answer was causing trouble or creating a controversy. Anybody who knows me knows that's last thing I want to do. So, most people have heard over the years, over their lifetime, that a person throughout their life is supposed to try and live within a normal communal standard. However, as we all know, what is considered normal changes over time and over location. What is normal now was not normal 30 years ago. What is normal now in Baltimore, I'm sure it would surprise nobody, is perhaps not normal in New York and vice versa, or in other places, not necessarily New York. So as a standard of living continues to evolve, is there an objective standard or mahalach that a ben Torah should know is preferred or is objectively, hashkafically correct or incorrect, regardless of whether the current norms are?
I want to say that, as in all question and answer cases, the emes for Reuven is not the same for Shimon, and not the same for Levi. Every person is different, and every community is different. I'm not sure there's a one-size-fits-all answer. Part of it has to go into the cheshbon is, of course, the area that a person lives in, for a person to be totally different than everybody around them, takes an enormous strength, where the parents have to be a team in a way of where their children feel proud and not deprived. That has to do with the kishreinus of the parents. In general, the wise thing for people raising their children is that whatever they can afford, by sometimes doing less than what they can afford, they're giving their kids a gewaltig sense of chinuch, of saying we could really afford something, even a better car, but it's not that important. And therefore, that doesn't mean that they have to drive a jalopy. They can drive a nice car as well. But it doesn't have to be exactly what the kids consider a success. It has to be something that reflects the lifestyle of the parents, their values, and their own inner chashivas. So the Eitzah for Reuven is not the same Eitzah for Shimon. But the Tzad HaShava with all is that if we measure our success as parents and as members of the community by how well we live, then we're certainly going to be a failure. If we measure ourselves by how consistent we are happy we are, content in our lives, even if we choose less, as long as it's something that's within reason, it gives the children a higher sense of value and chashivas, and it's much better for their lives in the future.
I understood included in the question is when people have to make a decision of how they live, they're taking into account what they consider are their needs, the needs of the family, and in defining that, there could be different standards, but there's a difference between what people might consider what they need, and then the question becomes how you meet those needs. And I think these are two chalakim of the question. For a person to say, and perhaps that's included in the question, it might even be a question of generations, for a person to say, I grew up in this kind of a home, and my kids can also grow up in the same home. A person has to recognize that things change, expectations change, and it's not always realistic to say that just because when I grew up, this is the way people lived, that I'm going to live this way when nobody else around me lives this way. For himself, it could be fine. It may be more difficult for certainly for his children. I once heard from my wife's uncle, Reb Binyamin, that when they lived in Williamsburg and when he was Rosh Yeshiva and Terev Hadas, they lived ba'aniyus, they didn't have money. But one of the things that his father was makbed on is that he should have a bicycle, because he felt the aniyus bifnim, he could be soivel, but the aniyus bachutz would be an embarrassment that all the other children had and he didn't have. So that was something he was sensitive to. So there's a piece to it where one has to recognize how the children feel. At the same time, I think it's important for people to understand the standards that one is being kaveya in his home is going to determine how the children perceive what's the bare minimum, what they see as the starting point, and therefore their expectations will rise not only in terms of how they're living while they're in your home, but going forward, when they build their own homes, their expectations are also totally in what they were used to. So you have to keep in mind that if their hasagas increase, you may be making things more challenging for them in the future. The only other point which I would add is, which is a general point, and that is ultimately the tzarchei hachayim in the life of a yid should be something that's there to help him serve the Ribbono Shel Olam better. So the tzarchei hachayim is to create a sense of menucha in a home, that there shouldn't be a sense of stress, there shouldn't be a feeling of not being pleasant to be at home for both the adults, for the children. So whether it's a matter of space or it's a matter of whatever else is needed, you'd like to create, in my mind, a place where everyone is comfortable and feels that it's a pleasant place to be. So I can't give a formula of what's needed. In every family dynamic, you can sometimes need more space. Sometimes the family is fine with less space, depending on how everybody gets along and how they interact. But I think that in people's minds, that is the focus. You want to create a pleasant place that a child feels comfortable at home, wants to be at home. Now, obviously, the temperament and the behavior of the parents is a very major factor in what the temperature is in the home and what the climate is in the home. But I think that that's the mechuvan. And you won't necessarily have a happier family because you have a more luxurious home. You won't necessarily have a less happy family because the house might be crowded. That's not the kaveya. The kaveya obviously is the way the family lives and the way the family interacts. So the judgment has to be made. Does the family need it? But I think in defining what it needs, I think the mechuvan should be that it's a home where children are comfortable, where they're growing up. Obviously, they're comfortable in their surroundings. If there's a lot of fighting in the house, you know, I think that many people understand there's fighting and there's fighting. And the fact that there's very intense interaction amongst children is not something that's necessarily a negative. But if it's really not a good environment, it only brings out bad midos, then if space is a factor, that's an important piece. But I think that the judgment that has to be made is really I'm calling it the emotional health, but I think it's just the general feelings of the occupants of the home. That should be the kaveh as to whether or not changes should be made.
I just want to add one small point. A number of years ago, I was at a Termasera convention, and 2 years after the convention, I meet someone who was for Lakewood Mechanchim, and one of them came over to me and said, "The only thing I remember from the convention is that you said 2 years ago that when you make lunches for your kids, since you're a Rebbe and a lot of their friends can afford more, then I was a big believer in giving my kids as much junk as possible. They love when I made the lunches as opposed to my wife making the lunches. But when they had to be with other kids who were living at a higher clip, I wanted them to feel they were the same. But that doesn't mean that in our house it has to be the same point that I've seen made, Hashem Rabbi Yankov."
What is the panel's opinion about what we find today is an ever-increasing world of what I'm going to call frum entertainment, where we now have in the frum community our own magazines, plays, films, motivational speakers, educational speakers, websites, books, v'chahena, all geared toward our kehillah? Are the existence of these things a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Is it better than now people have quote unquote kosher entertainment? Or is that an oxymoron in and of itself?
The Rosh Hashiva Rabbi Weinberg used to say that for many years, many generations, people had to work so hard in the basics, taking care of a home, making a living, that people were just too exhausted at the end of the day that they didn't need much to fill their time. And he would comment that we have so much assistance, different appliances, that we have more time on our hands. So he was saying it in the context of whatever he was speaking about. And there is such a reality that people need to fill their time. I think we also have to keep in mind that there's a lot that people can gain from, and perhaps people need to fill their mind and their time that they have with things that are beneficial. The husband and wife are very busy, the children are busy, but there's a lot of time that needs to be filled. It's beneficial for them, it should be filled with something that's, I'll call it educational, at least productive. However, when Chazal tell us that miyatzicha, when Chazal are telling us to be memayat besicha, so the mefarshim are oimed that miyatzicha means a person needs miyatzicha, that a person is not a machine, and he needs that sikha. That's part of what is needed for his being able to function as a person. So to me, it seems that in the question that's being posed, there's two halakim. The entertainment part might go into the miyat sikha. There's another part of it that there's a lot out there in terms of what people could hear and people could read that is, we'll call it educational and has value. So there are two halakim. The parts that are educational, the parts that can help us, so that's a very good thing, that people have good things to read. People have time on their hands. People, if they're encouraged to read things that they could learn from, that's a mila. I think one of the bigger challenges in our times is that I have to confess that I don't read much of what was included in the question. So I don't really know what's included in all the material that we're being asked about. But my sense is that given the broad clientele that needs this, we'll call it reading material, and given the fact that whoever is producing it is in business and they need to sell whatever they're selling, I don't know if the value of all that's out there is that great outside of what might be construed as entertainment. You know, some of it might be Yotza Hefseda Bischaray, but again, I don't read much, so I can't say. I would just say to a person in general that one should be careful what he brings into his home, what both he and others in the family are reading. You can't expect people to always be in the matzav haruach, that they're sitting and reading things that need concentration and iyun. Not everybody is like that. People that could benefit from reading things that are either educational, inspirational, that's certainly a mila. But practically speaking, you know, people need to relax and they want to read something that doesn't require much concentration. But what I would say is there should be havchana in what comes into a person's home. The ones who are I guess will either publishing or printing, they're looking at what sells. So if you have controversial topics, that sells. If you have things that catch the eye, whether it's the advertisements or the topic, it sells. Is that necessarily a good thing to be reading and spending your time with? Lav dafka. So to have the havchana to say anything that's not that I don't say birchas haTorah on, I don't let into my house, is not necessarily a practical thing. But at the same time, there should be some benefit for the reader, that at least it has some message, some inspiration, at least not a negative. Teaching wrong values shouldn't be conveying things that people should see as the aspirations in life. We live in a generation where the hana of Olam Hazeh, it's out there, and as will be advertised at our fingertips, and we can all get it, and you haven't lived your life if you haven't gotten it. And I think it's something that sends a very wrong message. And sometimes you have things that are talked about that it's not a mila to be even read about or spoken about. So I think havchana is important. You can't hold the family to a standard that they can't read anything that's not relaxing, but at the same time, it should be something I feel that meets one's standards as a ben Torah. So I'm not saying anything about a particular form of entertainment, if that's what it's going to be called. But again, I think it goes into the miyat sicha. It's needed. People need to relax. People need mipam lapam, something to be able to just unwind. But if it becomes part of the regular routine, I think it's not doesn't have real benefit.
I would like to confess that I read more than Rav Tzvi does, which isn't saying much, but I do. And I feel very strongly that many from publications cross the line for that exact reason, wanting to sell their papers and magazines, that we as parents have a job either not to allow things or to allow things, but to point out to our children what's incorrect. I'm not a big letter writer to these magazines and papers, but one time I read in one of the well-known magazines, or one of their top writers wrote that divorce is not such a bad thing because, you see, there's a whole Masechta written about Gittin. I was wondering about that. There's also a Masechta called Krisus and Saita, and I somehow their logic failed me that a Masechta written about something is an indication that it's acceptable. So today, kids are exposed by letting things in the house under frum auspices that are very, very challenging. And if they're going to be there, then we have to be on top of our kids to make sure that they know when they're reading things, either to avoid them reading or to say, this is not right. In terms of entertainment, as he said, is important. I think with the flood of what there is today and whatever is called Jewish music, which I have a hard time understanding because a lot of it doesn't talk to me, but I think that the flood of information today makes the strongest argument for people to make sure that they're in touch with their Rabbanim and their Rabbeim to get hadracha about how to deal with the onslaught of so much information and entertainment and figure out, according to the kehillah you're in, the schools your kids are in, the matzav that you're in, of where you can draw a line and say, that's not for us. Or if your kid is exposed to something, point out that just because it's done in a frum publication doesn't make it correct. So there's a necessity both to be critical and necessity to go for hadracha and be dovah tamid chacham, your local rabbanim, your rabbeim, to try to figure out what works for your family in the context of where you live and everything else that they go with, to realize that a lot of frum information that's available is healthy, and there's many times information available that is, I think, counterproductive and negative.
I'm going to ask one more question, and then I'm going to start while the band are answering. I'll go around the room. Anybody who wants to ask a question can let me know. When I was reaching out to people about Q&A, somebody requested to ask the following question. In many communities in Klal Yisrael, communities are growing. Under what circumstances can a group of people, I guess depends on your point of view, break away from community institutions or grow new ones to start their own? Be it a shul, a school, a chesed organization, under what grounds are those things to be done or not done?
I think I answered the question with my last statement, that the importance of following Das Torah and Hadracha is sometimes Stira Zekanim is Binyan, and Binyan Arm is Stira, and there can be situations where trying to do something of their own could be beneficial. There can be times doing something of their own and breaking away could be detrimental. And it needs objective, genuine Das Torah that knows the matziv in the community that you're at to really answer the question properly. A lot of times when Talmidim call with shaylos about different hanhagas in different communities, I will tell them to go to the particular rabbanim in that town that I know of are balanced, balei das, with a good sense of the community. But to import what is done here in another community or another community is done here is incorrect, because every community has its own time, its own flavor, and its own particular needs. So things like that should be decided by the people who are the Das Torah of that community, and if those people need to communicate with greater people, so then those Rabbanim should be in touch with those Gedolim that they're going to ask the questions to make sure that this is done objectively and not just personally because someone wants to be the head or break off from something. Sometimes it's great and sometimes it's negative. And the difference is if you're doing it with proper dust tire.
I would just add that I think that whenever such a question arises, I think the muskel rishon has to be that it's always beneficial for a community to remain intact as much as possible. And to be able to work within the framework of a community and that people's needs are being met, that's ideal. Now, sometimes it's a function of growth in a community that as it gets larger and larger, then the differences between people, between the individuals, are now differences between groups within the community. And as the community grows in its kamus, it could even be healthier if there would be, whether it's different shuls or different institutions, it might be healthier just because of the fact that given the numbers, it requires more maizdas, and sometimes it's not, I wouldn't call it breaking away, it's more that they're outgrowing the ability to be under one roof, and it might be better that they have some. I don't want to use the word division, but whether it's a different shul, different whatever it may be. But I think that very often people rush into it because things are not exactly the way I would like them to be done, or whatever it may be. As Rav Shraga said, I think consulting with the leadership of the community, and sometimes if the leadership wants to consult with someone outside the community and they could be masbir, the makeup of the community to get some guidance is important, because I think very often people don't have the full scope of what the community is like and they don't really understand the impact of a breakaway, that when you break off a piece of a community, you're creating division, and division is something that usually grows rather than shrinks. And period is never a mile in a community. As I said, sometimes it's just healthier if you have groups that are not under one roof and everybody is happy, and it doesn't necessarily mean that they're breaking away from each other. It just means, you know, if you have a minig svard and minig ashkenaz minyanim, they're not breaking away from each other, they're just recognizing differences which are part of the makeup of Klal Yisrael. When the breakaway or the split is reflective more of not being able to work together, sometimes the healthier thing is if we can't really work together because we feel we have different perspective, different interests, then maybe it's also healthier to have two different institutions. But I think the muskel rishon should be to see whether they could work together. I think it's usually a mile in a community if it can work as one unit. But if it's better to be separate than with hadracha, they should figure out how to work together. Sometimes you have no choice where you're forced to break away, but it should be done with kavod rosh.
I just want to add that there's one issue that we have today besides the ribuy of people, which would make the necessity, therefore, for different shuls, the yeshivas and maizis, etc. There's an issue that we have today that didn't exist years ago, and that issue is called money. That because, Baruch Hashem, there is a lot more wealth within our community, the reason to make something new is not because people have the money to do it. That's an excuse. The reason to do it is because it's a real Torah D'Katzeirach. If it's a Torah D'Katzeirach, and there's money to do it, Matay Manoyim. But if the impetus is because there are people who made money who want to have their own places, if that is the motivation, then that is not a Torah D'Katzeirach or a basis for expanding and making different mises.
Any questions anybody wants to ask from the crowd?
Should we start encouraging our children to start off and move and live in Eretz Yisrael? Both live long term, both mitzad the ruchnius and the gashmius, in the sense that obviously there's advantages of the ruchnius there, but even the gashmius, like now, if you look at the trends now, what's happening in America, like where the cost of tuitions are really forcing people to have to work extra, which can be a pagama, like in even like Yishev Hadas, compared to Eretz Yisrael, which they don't have that. Just for an example, like if we educate our children here only to have to send them to seminaries and yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael, and the seminaries are in the range of $30,000, like why not raise them there? And they have that lifestyle there. And I ask the question in the sense of, you know, encouraging our children to move there because perhaps people here with families, obviously there's that challenge, but if you start there, it's not. And I guess just one more point, like I think there's, you see a real, you know, almost kibbutz glois from many other places, except in America, we seem to be here building strong, staying here. And that's even without the issue of anti-Semitism, which seems to be a growing reality.
If somebody wants to encourage their children to live there in Eretz Yisrael, they probably have to move there, because that's the greatest indication that they think it's the right place to live. Now, everybody understands the chashivas of living in Eretz Yisrael. Living in Eretz Yisrael comes with the understanding that it's a different culture, an understanding that there's no place that doesn't have nisyonos and doesn't have its challenges. If a person's child grows up and in their life's experience decides they want to live in Eretz Yisrael, one should be encouraging. But that's a decision they have to make, understanding everything that comes with it. You can't isolate one aspect and say, Eretz Yisrael has this mila, so they should live in Eretz Yisrael. It's the entire package of living in Eretz Yisrael. And the child has to be comfortable with that entire package. That means the child has to think about Parnassah and Eretz Yisrael. The child has to think about the lifestyle in Eretz Yisrael. The child has to think about raising children in Eretz Yisrael. You can't live in Eretz Yisrael. You can try, but I wouldn't advise trying to live there like an American. You can. There's certain places where you can live like that, but then you have to figure out how to navigate the broader, we'll call it frum community in Eretz Yisrael, and where do you fit? It's very different than America. So I have no problem with people wanting to live in Eretz Yisrael, but to say Eretz Yisrael has this mila over America and it has many milas over America and not deal with the full picture, I don't think is an Eitz HaTeiva for any person. So if a person is mechanech his children to recognize the milas of living in Eretz Yisrael, where perhaps for many the Gashmias, the Madrega of Gashmias is a lower standard. If somebody appreciates the Ribui Torah in Eretz Yisrael and therefore wants to live there, if somebody appreciates perhaps being more menutic from certain challenges that exist in America, that's wonderful. But ultimately, the children have to be willing to live with the entire package that comes with living in Eretz Yisrael. I don't think you can be memayet the importance of the child finding their place there in terms of, we'll call it their parnosa, their occupation, their whatever you want to call it, what they're going to be doing. It has to be something that they will have sipuk from, they'll be happy with. Obviously, the person, their whoever they marry, will also have to be happy there. You know, there are many variables. Is the family staying in America and they're moving to Eretz Yisrael? You know, there are many factors, but I don't think you can just take one segment of it and just focus on that.
I'd like to add that the cultures of Eretz Yisrael and America, even in the Olam HaTorah, are very, very different. I was talking to someone recently who got married and raised their children in Eretz Yisrael, which is the way to do it. Not to move after your kids are ready, you know, of age and in school, and then have to pass you to a whole different culture. It's kamat ein bayis she'ein shamais. Families that move with kids that are older, some of the kids always suffer. If you want to move, you move. It's not even a get to anyone sitting here, I don't think, kamat. After people, kids are married, it's something else. When you move in the middle, it's a difficulty. But you see how deep the cultures are. I was talking to someone who moved there and who has 12 married kids, and every one of their married kids, and they all went through the Eretz Yisrael Dika system, right? And it became regular Eretz Yisrael Dika Charedim, all married American Israelis. And not one of their kids married an Israeli, but even though their kids and the next generation will probably be less, but the fact is that cultures make a very big difference. The expense of seminaries, which is exorbitant, is a very good point, but the fact is that the thing that kids get out of going there for the seminaries, in my mind, is more the seeing the sviva, the chain, the geschmack that Eretz Yisrael provides that we can't fully duplicate over here is something which is worth it, even though there something should be done about the business called seminary instead of the education called seminary. The one thing that I think everyone should agree on is that once you realize the cultures are different, it's not our job to change the culture of Eretz Yisrael. There are many people moving to Eretz Yisrael. I want to have American-style moistness in Eretz Yisrael as well. And they're still trying it. I'm not convinced it's going to be successful. And it's just a metzias that cultures run deep, and that if you want to live there, you have to pass through to that way of life. But just to say you're going to create what we have here in Eretz Yisrael is not practical, nor do I think it's hashkafa necessarily correct. It doesn't make our hanhaga wrong, but our hanhaga is good for us, and their hanhaga is good for them. It's not our job to change their society, and they don't have to change our side either. We can each learn from each other the milos that each one give, right? I was just talking to a Yid Meretz Yisrael who does fundraising in America and is despoiled from the amount of Bnei Torah who are in business, that are starke Bnei Torah, holding in high level of learning, many of the types of people that are sitting here, that they don't see this Metzias in Eretz Yisrael. So we have a lot of milos here, there's a lot of milos there, but they remain culturally different, and that's part of the diversity of Klal Yisrael.
Anybody? Okay, so that's the question I wanted to ask. Somebody mentioned to me recently that in the shul that he davens in, and I'm not even talking about on Shabbos, I'm talking about during the week, he said he's not sure if when he walks into shul, if he's in the safest shul in town or in the least safe shul in town, based on the number of people who he is aware of that carry firearms. This is a growing issue in the firm community, and what are Bram's thoughts on it?
I thought there were no controversial topics.
Every keila needs to be protected, but you know, I'm from maybe a old timer that if I see a gun, I become nervous. Right? I never held one, don't want to hold one, and just have a very, very hard time with the concept. I fully understand that places have to be protected, but I think it's a little bit overdone. Obviously, you know, Mishmartim Adnav Shaseichem is an important thing, but you have to be careful that it's really for the shmira of the kehila and not for the geshmak that some people have, which I don't relate to, of owning a gun. I confess, I have zero geshmak in guns. If that's a chasara, I accept it.
So I will ask.
He's too smart to even answer such a question.
That's okay, no problem. I will reference the previous Q&A on one point. Earlier today, we asked the Rosh Yeshiva about getting brachas from various types of people, mekubalim, gedalei Torah. The Rosh Yeshiva seemed to be magdarit based on whether or not there was a quid pro quo of payment. Now, I'm not going to tell people what to do before or after this event, but seeing as how the Rosh Yeshiva thought it was a worthy endeavor for one to get words of bracha from Gedalei Torah, perhaps we could get some from the Rebbeim to close out today's Yom Chakal.
What was the question?
No question.
Okay.
No question.
He wants you to go back to your Hasidic roots.
Every man has his price.
I don't have that problem. I have no Hasidic roots. Okay.
I think that our Messiah is, which comes from Chazal, that we believe that people who are big people, Talmid Chachamim, Tzadikim, that their tefillos and their brachos carry weight by the Rabbanu Shel Olam. The Gemara says, person has a chayla b'tayt beisai, yel chesel chacham. So we, that is our emunah, that's our mesira, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants our tefillos, and we will go to people to ask them for brachas or their tefillos, because we recognize that because they're much bigger than we are, that it's misayeya also for our tzairach. That's our emunah. Whether or not there's something that there's guarantees or something that patters us from davening and doing maisim toivim for our own schuyais, I think sometimes people fall into this trap, and part of it has to do with looking for the instant solution that's not machayiv me to do anything serious, that we're looking for someone who will just take care of the problem, that I don't have to do anything, and if it costs a little bit, no, so I'll pay for it. But the Rabbanu Shalom wants us to daven, he wants our tefillos. So I'm not against being mavakesh brachas and tefillos from big people. It's a maila. But it doesn't absolve the person who has the tzaira from davening. That's what a Kodesh Baruch Hu wants. When a Kodesh Baruch Hu sends anything, any challenge to a person, and life is constantly full of challenges, if I ask, what does the Rabbanu Shalom want from me? Is the answer that I should be finding people to ask brachas from? He wants something from me. The Gemara says, Yefashev Shemaisev. It doesn't say, look in the phone book, in the yellow pages, to see where to get the brachas from. So he wants something from me. But of course, a person should always, if a person has access to someone who's a chacham, who's a tzaddik, avada, there's a big tayelus in that. But it's not b'mokah, my own davening, and b'mokah, my doing something as a schus. I think people sometimes, when they go to big people and they ask them, what should I do? They're looking at it as some sort of a magical solution that just do this and everything will be okay. And I don't think that the big tzaddikim are making any guarantees. They're giving both an etza taiva and they're giving a bracha. So the kayach of their etza is because they're being mavarach, the person that their tzairach should be met. They're giving the person an etza that they think is a hanhaga taiva, usually that will be a schus for that person, and the person should continue davening. So I don't know if I answer the question, but those I think that those that come with a pushka, yesh livdaik achareim.
Somebody said that we live in a generation today that we have become an am segula, where segulas seem to be the big selling point. I recently had a Talmud, had a child born with some challenging health issues, and he's in the kollel, and he wanted to spend money they didn't have to go to Eretz Yisrael to get brachas. And any type of person's in a tzara, and if they run for brachas, it's 100% understandable and chashuv. But I told him that I'm not convinced that his going to Eretz Yisrael and spending all that money, instead of just asking somebody to go into the particular God or tzad he wants, to use the money for the ticket to support a kailo, he may have a bigger schus than spending that money just to go on a trip to ask for the bracha personally. Even though I don't blame anybody who's in a tzar for doing such a thing, but from the way I was taught from my rabbeim, I think that too much money is spent on these things, even going for brachas, where the money can be spent for bigger schusim. And I think one thing that we can all walk away with in each and every person, anytime anybody asks me for a bracha, I tell them, I'm happy to give you a bracha if I can tell you a quick word. That is, that when Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha was asked to give Chav Yochanan the Eberster a bracha, Mikan shelo pei pichas het yekal beinecha, there's no greater distance in the Bria between the Bairi and the Nivra. And if the Eberster can ask Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha, that's the best place to learn from the Alti pichas het yekal beinecha, because if you ask me or I ask you, whatever the difference is between the two, it's far smaller. Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha and the Rabbanu Shalom, which is infinite. So therefore, every yid giving another yid a bracha is a schus. We should all be ready to mivarach one another and be zeicha to get brachas from as many people as we can, and through that be zeicha to kol milui d'meitav. Have a good yantiv.